Blog Talk Radio.
Wow. Good evening and welcome to Murder 123. Special episode tonight and next week. We're talking about one of the most publicized mass murders in history. Bigger than H.H. Holmes. Bigger than anyone I know. First of all, I want to say hello to our esteemed panel tonight. First of all, Robin. Miss Robin is without power thanks to the tornadoes this morning in the Midlands of South Carolina. So we wish her the best. And if any of you can think about it after our show tonight, I'm going to put up a GoFundMe page for a couple $100 to see if I can help them and their two neighbors. There are three of them that have real problems. And I'm going to see if I can't raise a couple $100 to try to help them out. And we send our thoughts and prayers to Robin, Robin, her family, Gail, her neighbor. And then there's another house right on down from them. And they were hit really badly. So anyway, we just hope that they're okay. And I'm glad I've heard from her, and she's, you know, they're alive and well, but she said it's a mess out there. So anyway, glad we've heard from her. I want to say greetings to Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, one of our esteemed cohorts. How are you, Papa Stro? How are you and Dorothy doing?
Oh, great, great. Speaking of tornadoes, a tornado almost hit here this morning, actually, when the front came up my way. And yeah. Evidently, Dorothy scared the one here away on the porch. So we were spared. But, yeah, my thoughts and prayers are with Robin. I hope she's all right.
I'll tell y'all something. I believe, I guess you can hear me. Looks like Tony might have lost sound. I'm going to just tell him to call back in. I'm going to tell him to call back. Because it has been a little bit sketchy. The internet has been sketchy today. It wouldn't work about half the time, at least on my phone. I mean, I could always get to things on, you know, right on the web on my laptop. But I'll tell you, it has been a little, you know, the weather has really affected a lot of us. So anyway, so we're glad you're okay. Glad Dorothy's okay. If you don't know Dorothy, go check out Papa Stro on Facebook, and you will be led to Dorothy. Dorothy is his sidekick and friend, and Dorothy has scared the likes of the great Briscoe brothers of NWA and WCW. Right, Papa Stro?
Oh, yeah. The names go on. Pat Patterson, Jimmy Hart, the list going on. She's got quite a collection on her list.
Well, I didn't know anything could scare Pat Patterson, but that's another story for another time, right, Papa Stro?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Was I very polite about that one? Did I say it just right?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's about the way it is.
Quite the life of the party.
Oh, she can be. She had a guy at a dinner table one time. He saw her, jumped up, and started pressing his face against the window, saying, "I've got to get out of here. I've got to get out of here. It's absolutely the best." Yeah. So anyway, well, that's good. Well, and we've got we're getting more and more. From Harlan, Kentucky, the murder capital of the country. Tony, how are you doing, Tony Filosi?
I'm doing fine, John. How's everybody doing?
We're good. We're all better than Robin with no power over there, but that's cool. We're glad to have you here, and we're going to talk about one of your Kentucky boys. Oh, it's going to be a madhouse tonight. And of course, from Hollywood, California, one of the most exciting people I know, and I mean it, Devin Tate is with us. How are you tonight, Devin?
Hey, John, I'm great. How are you guys all doing? It's so great to be here on the podcast with you all.
Oh, it's great.
Devin.
It's great to be. Yeah, we're glad to have you here. I'm counting musicians, because this week and next week on Murder 123, we're talking about professional musicians. Did everybody know that? I bet you didn't. So tonight, one of the
Give
most.
Give me a beat.
Well, I mean, I know. I mean, right now, I know of three professional musicians on this on this podcast right now, Devin, Papa Stroh, and myself. We've all made some living with music, and we're going to talk about two other actually great musicians. You would never expect that to happen on a Murder 123 podcast. We're talking about the Charles Manson family. So tonight is Helter Skelter, and so is next time, because there's some Helter Skelter, there's some madness about this whole 2 months of murder that a lot of people don't know about, and I wanted to bring this up, and then that's why I made such a big deal about it on Facebook today. I think it's very important. We're going to talk about Charles Manson and Robbie Beausoleil, and you know, I'll tell you all about Robbie here in a minute. We're going to talk. So anyway, first of all, Tony Filosi told me an amazing fact about a little boy named Charlie Maddox. You know who I'm talking about, Tony?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so tell us about Charlie Maddox and where he grew up.
Now, we're talking about Charlie Manson.
Charlie Maddox, who then became Charles Manson. Where did he grow up?
Charles' dad, I think, was from around the Ashland area, and I think Charles was in and out of there. I think Charlie was born maybe in Cincinnati.
Maybe. Okay.
But I think he spent a lot of time with his dad, who convinced Charlie that he was a colonel of some sort.
That he was
a colonel, if I'm not mistaken.
A Kentucky colonel.
Maybe a Kentucky colonel or a, but the story goes that he was a colonel living in Kentucky, so he very well could have been a Kentucky colonel. But Charlie seemed like he had a really rough childhood. As a lot of these fellas appear to have that we talk about, which doesn't justify what they did by any means. But at a young age, Charlie was he was abandoned. He wasn't wanted. He was sent to boys' homes at early age. Without a doubt, according to his own words, basically, you got beaten and you learned to box and fight, or you got beaten more, among other things.
Yes, we have noticed that from our former associates, such as Pee Wee Gaskins, and just about everybody we've talked about has, you know, they've gone into boys' homes, they get raped and beaten, and if they don't learn to be mean, they'll get more of it. So it's really a shame. Now I will tell you something that I have put together doing some research, because I spend about 3 or 4 hours researching every one of these things, and I came up with the most interesting thing. Does anybody here remember the name Lester Maddox?
Yes. He was a politician, right?
He was a something, all right. Devin, do you know that name? He might be a little bit old and long in the tooth for you.
Yeah, it doesn't ring a bell for me.
Okay, Papa Stroh, probably at least know who Lester Maddox is, right?
I believe so. If I'm thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, Lester Maddox was the former governor of Georgia, and he actually ran for president. And Randy Newman, now do we know the name Randy Newman?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Short piece.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, all right. So let me start with. I'm gonna start with Randy Newman.
Short people.
I'm gonna start with Randy Newman, and I'm gonna get up to Charlie Maddox, and include Lester Maddox. And now that's three people that you would never believe that would ever be in one single conversation. But what happened back when I was in college? I mean, I think it was 1861 when I was in college, you know, and Randy Newman wrote some very, very racist songs and had a huge recording career. I was surprised when Randy ended up writing for Disney. He's a genius musician. But he wrote a song called Rednecks. And that song talked about Lester Maddox, because he had quite a reputation in Georgia, being on a New York talk show with some big smartass. And it turns out that's a true story. The name Dick Cavett, he was back in the generation with
Dick Cavett, yes.
Yeah, with Johnny Carson. And Cavett had a very, very popular show. And he gave Lester Maddox such a fit about being a racist and a segregationist that Lester Maddox walked off of his show in the middle of the show live.
I remember that episode, yeah.
And then what a lot of people don't know is he had him back on about 2 years later. And Lester Maddox gave him such a fit that Cavett walked off his own show and told him to get rid of Lester Maddox or he wasn't coming back on at the station. He said, get rid of this man until he's gone. I'm leaving. And Lester Maddox got up and applauded, and it was great. I mean, this is back when television was real, and television was just like Saturday Night Live. It was live. That first two seasons were 100%. They were 7 second delay live, weren't they, folks?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, seven second delay live, and it was amazing. It was amazing. They had to be real careful, and some stuff got out. Best thing that ever got, the funniest thing that ever got out was when one of them introduced Phyllis Diller, the great comedian. They said, here she is, the queen of comedy, Phyllis Diller. And so Phyllis Diller comes walking out on that New York stage on Saturday Night Live, and she said, huh, the queen of comedy? I thought that was Paul Lynde. And I will never forget, we all, you know, there were eight or nine of us having some drinks, and we all looked at each other and said, did you just say that? And I think that was
Paul Lynde. Oh, my God.
I did too. Did anybody ever say his Halloween special, Paul Lynde's Halloween special? That's way back in the day.
I'm going to stick that out. I'm going to see it so bad.
It is awesome, I swear. I love Paul Lynde.
Paul Lynde was he was a great. He and Rodney Dangerfield, I believe, were the two best stand-up comics ever.
Oh my God!
I mean, because they could do something that nobody else can do. On the top, and Drew. Let's go ahead and put Drew Carey in that bunch, because those guys, off the top of their head, were funnier than anybody with a script ever. And Rodney Dangerfield said, now Devin, we're talking about people out in Hollywood here. This is the funniest thing that Rodney Dangerfield ever said. He was on the set of Caddyshack, and he finished the scene, and he said, man, I'm failing. Nobody's laughing. And somebody looked at him and said, Rodney, you've never done a movie, have you? He said, no. We're supposed to be quiet. We can't laugh. This is a movie set. He said, oh, I never thought about it. Yeah, that's a true story. And I think that's truly one of the funniest things in history. So anyway, we're getting back to Lester Maddox, and he was quite famous. And so I think that due to the things that Charlie Manson was involved in, I believe he decided to change his name from Maddox, because Lester Maddox had a pretty bad reputation. He changed his name from Maddox and he called himself Manson, because he believed he was the house of the Lord, and Manson didn't quite cut it. Now that's the story that I kind of gathered in doing some research, and I think it's interesting. You know, how else can you get Paul Lynde, Rodney Dangerfield, Lester Maddox, Dick Cavett, Johnny Carson, and Charles Manson in the same story. Only on Murder 1-2-3. Devin, they can't even do that out in Hollywood, can they?
Not usually.
I know. I need to come out, and you and I need to go do some stand-up. I will amaze them with some of my Southern knowledge. You know, they'll probably kick me off the stage and just listen to you. But anyway, so one thing that a lot of people don't know is Charlie Manson and his other co-conspirator, Robbie Beausoleil. First of all, they were both pretty close to being professional musicians. I'll bet none of you nor anybody in the audience realizes that the Beach Boys recorded a song by Charles Manson, and it is the B-side of one of their big hits. And it was just.
I did know that.
You did?
Yeah, Dennis.
I did, yes. I know that.
Yeah, Dennis, well. Dennis Wilson, Manson had a some sort of deal going through Dennis Wilson, I think, through a producer that of the Beach Boys.
Exactly, and I found it, and I'm going to post it after the show for everyone to enjoy. It's a great song. It really is a great song. So I've got the link right here, and I'm excited that I found it, and so I'm going to post that. And Robbie Beausoleil, his other co-conspirator, who was a true murderer, he was not only a professional musician, he was also a professional porn star. I mean, Devin, you boys out there, you got the people out there, don't you? In the Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and nobody knows. Musician and porn star and great musician recorded by the Beach Boys. I mean, I just think it's phenomenal the talent that these guys had. So the two of them and then three of us have been, Tony, now have you ever made a living or any money off of being a musician? Then it would be four out. It'd be four out. Pardon?
No, I have not. No, nor a porn star either.
Okay, well, I figured as much on that one. I figured you're an okay dude. But, yeah, we've got a lot of musicians in here and around here. Papa Stroh sitting there playing a grand piano being lowered down onto a ring. About what year did that happen as the introduction of the maestro? When did that happen? What year?
Oh, gosh. Well, as the maestro of WCW, mid-90s, like latter 90s, rather. With that, and
okay.
I was playing piano like years before that.
Yeah, but I mean, you know,
singing in theater and plays and oh god.
Yeah, but here you are. Here you are, the maestro, and you're playing the baby grand.
I've always been
piano.
A maestro, John. I've always been a maestro my whole life.
That's true, but there was one point that night you were the maestro in front of probably a quarter of a billion people. And that's a big maestro night, I think. So we're proud of you. And
oh,
then Devin,
yeah, I've had quite a few big audiences.
I know you have. And then last year on Valentine's, you know what? Next year on Valentine's, we've got to have another couple of cool, classy girls. We had the She Squatchers a year and a half ago, about a year and a half ago, and we played Devin. What is that great song that I like so much that Wendy Ho sang in the video?
Oh, anyone can break somebody's heart.
Anyone can break somebody's heart. I love that thing. And everybody, if you want to listen to it, go to Scarycast, go to last Valentine's Day show, Jen Cruz of the She Squatchers. And it was a great show. And we had Papa Stroh in a music video. Tony and I, of course, were not in a music video. Tony, we'll just have to make us a video with some ghosts. And then we can just do it.
That is a good idea.
And I got the place to. I'm going to go ahead and announce something. Is everybody ready? I got one of my big announcements, and I was kind of saving it for this audience on Murder 1-2-3.
Are you going to sing the song?
No, it's better than that.
Sing the song. Come on.
On my birthday.
On my birthday,
which is November the 7th, we are going to have a ghost hunt and conference at Perryville Battlefield, Tony Filosi.
All right.
And so you didn't know it, but you're on the speaking list. Yeah. And if Papa Stroh can clear that date, we'd love to have him. And Devin, if we can get you a flight, I'd love to have you up there at Perryville Battlefield. It is frighteningly haunted. And you will see Tony and I, we will probably get somebody who's a musician to play guitar for us, and we'll record our own music video. How's that, Tony?
That would be great. If we can dress up in period dress and do it like retro and all that, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
As long as there's not any minefields, it'd be okay.
No, there's no minefields up there. There are... You know what's funny? So I call up, and I'm sorry for digressing, but it's like I haven't gotten to talk to y'all, and wish Robin was on here. She'll be up there too. I'm gonna have all y'all up there if I can. So I called up Perryville to tell them I wanted to do something, because as a lot of us may or may not know, Ghost Adventures has done two shows up there, and there a lot of great filming has been done for that Confederate battlefield. And so some guy answered. He said, "Hey, how can I help you?" I said, "Well, you know, I'm Dr. John, and I have some podcasts, and I also run some, you know, Bigfoot conferences and the Lizard Man Festival, and I wanted to do a ghost event up there." He said, "Oh, we wish you would, because Zach Bagans won't come back. He's too big for us. We're not doing it anymore." But he said, "You know,
nice. We
can do it." And by the way, I've written 15 books on haunted fields. I said, "Are you asking to be a speaker?" He said, "Absolutely." So we're going to have the world expert on haunted battlefields in America up there as one of our keynote speakers. And that's going to be pretty cool. It really is.
What's his name again?
His name is, I knew you'd ask me, and I've got his, well, okay, I don't know, but I've got a copy of the front cover of his book right here. And it is, I don't want to get it wrong, lest he hear this and say, "Well, if you can't even remember my name, I'm not going to come up." Okay, I will find. Hey, Tony, I'll find it during the show, and I'll let you know.
Okay.
But anyways,
shoot me a link.
I will. The one that's great. He's got a couple chapters in Haunted Battlefields of the Confederacy, and he is actually the director of Perryville. Now, of the Perryville National.
That's awesome.
So that's great. I mean, so all that good stuff happens. But anyway, all right, so that's enough consequential stuff. We got to get down to business. And I wanted to make it a little bit brighter and lighter and everything, because we're going to get into one of the nastiest murders in history. And the one thing people don't do is they don't talk much about Robbie Beausoleil. He was, you know, it was terrible. So here's what happened. Welcome. He was born in Kentucky, or he was in Kentucky, here and there in Ashland, Kentucky. And so he ends up starting his family. Now, in 1971, he was convicted of first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder for the deaths of 7 people, making him a full-fledged serial killer, because he's got more than 3. The prosecution conceded Manson never actually murdered anybody, but he directed the murder of 7 people. And he was actually convicted for the first-degree murder and the deaths of Gary Hinman and Donald Shea. And Gary Hinman was kind of put in a bad situation, even though Robbie Beausoleil, the musician and porn star, tortured and killed Gary. Manson was charged with first-degree murder for that. So anyway, here's how the story goes. First of all, we're going to go back to Robert Kenneth Beausoleil, born November 6th. He was born one day before me, so he's a Scorpio. So I probably know a good bit about him. He's a pretty scary dude, I'm going to tell you that. He's an American murderer. He was given the death sentence for killing his friend Gary Hinman. They were both associates of Charlie Manson and the Manson family. And he killed him on July the 27th. Didn't take him very long to convict him of this. He was later granted his sentence, was commuted to life in prison when the California Supreme Court issued a ruling that invalidated all death sentences issued in California before 1972. And he's got kind of an interesting thing. He, during his incarceration, during the California state prison system, he recorded and released music, along with working on visual art and instrument design and media technology. And actually, on his 19th parole board hearing in January 2019, he was recommended for parole. But the governor of California said, "Well, we're not going to parole you, because here you are spending your time in jail making a living." because he apparently did pretty well selling his music. And he was a guitar player and he's a singer. And he also did some visual artwork, which might have been also related to the fact that he was a porn star. We'll just leave it at that, okay? He was born in Santa Barbara, and his parents were regular working-class people. It was a real big Catholic family, and he had four brothers. And then when he was sent to Los Prietos Boys Camp for 10 months because he ran away from home, and he had a series of juvenile pranks, which weren't exactly pranks. He was a thug when he was 15 years old. And he kind of drifted in between San Francisco and Los Angeles because at that time, let's face it, it was around 62, 63. Devin, as someone that's out in Hollywood, you had some of the greatest musicians in the early 60s out in California ever, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And that was when Haight-Ashbury Street in San Francisco was the center of intellectualism. Burroughs and I can't remember, there's a couple others who I was very fortunate to meet one time in New York when they were up at NBC. And this is a long time ago. Thank you to my friend Ralph Burrell, who I need to have on our show. He was the creator of MSNBC. He's a very good friend of mine. And we need to get him on here. I need Ralph to tell that story, probably on Murder 123, because he knew a lot of these guys, because he was he was just in and around there. And Ralph, as I said, invented the idea of MSNBC. And I don't think Rachel Maddow would be so happy with Ralph if she knew him. Maybe she does. I don't know. But anyway, he was in the Los Angeles area, and he drifted between there and San Francisco, and he became really part of that emerging countercultural music scene and acting. And he was a member of a number of rock bands in the mid 60s. And you know, we've never heard of any of them, I don't think. Milky Way, the Grassroots. Now, this is not the Grassroots that did Sooner or Later Love Is Gonna Get You. This is the first Grassroots that then became the band Love. I guess they met Courtney or something, you know, and nobody laughed at that joke. That was terrible. Is anybody going to laugh at my Courtney Love? Thank you, Papa Stroh. That was for sure the best laugh. That Devin didn't want anything to do with that one, and I don't blame him. That was a bad joke. So anyway, in 1967, he got a part in Kenneth Anger's film Lucifer Rising. We probably need to take a look at that movie too, and just see what it's all about. Now, by the way, speaking of movies, because I've had some down and out time here. Because has anybody had some downtime during this coronavirus mess?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Okay, now Devin, you've had some. You're working from home. Papa Stroh, you're like me. You had some events canceled because you're a performer, wrestler, and entertainer, and you've had some stuff canceled, haven't you?
Cancel, postpone, you name it. It's been crazy.
I know. Tony is the only gainfully employed guy we've got. Devin is too, because Devin's working at home, and Tony goes into the courthouse up there in Harlan just looking for murderers, right?
We're on lockdown. Every time you enter, you have to have your temperature checked, and if it's over 100.1 or whatever, they send you home for a couple of days before you can come back. And then if it's over 100 again, you're off for 14 days. So you got to make sure you don't get a temperature.
Okay, or as we say down in Myrtle Beach, stay cool.
Stay cool. You got to stay cool up here.
All right. Well, I'm going to see if I can find the movie Lucifer Rising and post a link to that as well, because I think some of this collateral entertainment is really cool. I can tell you, and nobody but me would have found this out during the coronavirus season, every movie produced and directed by Edward D. Wood Jr. is available. Full-length version is available on YouTube now. Did you know that? No, oh, so Papa Stroh cleared his throat. Nobody's very interested in that. But what happened is his daughter, Kathy Wood, Kathy Wood Towner, gave me a call to see if I was still alive because we interviewed her. I think Papa Stroh, you were one of the people that helped me interview her on the old Comic-Con Stars. I mean, just what a nice lady. It was so nice. She called me up to see how I was doing. I mean, I appreciate it. And so anyway, we chatted a little bit. But yep. I am the only person probably in the last 10 years that actually watched Glenn or Glinda. And God, that was the worst movie. Oh, it was so bad. And Bela Lugosi was just at his worst. For a great actor, he was not good in that film. That's the Poule de Strings movie. All right. So there you go. I'll be quiet now. I'm gonna put up a link to Lucifer Rising and the Beach Boys song right after this is over. Obviously, I haven't had anybody to talk to in 3 days, and I'll shut up anyway. So what happens is now we're going to talk about the murder of Gary Hinman. According to the L.A. prosecutor, Vince Bugliosi, or Bugs, I think that's what he was called, because he wrote a book on Helter Skelter. He was killed over money and property that Charlie Manson believed Hinman owed to the family. At Beausoleil's second trial for murder, prosecutors said it had been rumored that Hinman received a $20,000 inheritance, and Charlie Manson, of course, felt like that belonged directly to the Manson family. And also, he had gotten some mescaline or I believe mescaline to give to some bikers, and it was not good. It was laced with something, and they came, you know, when a bunch of bikers that are not very happy come to your house and want their $1,000 back, you're going to give them their $1,000 back regardless. And then he didn't have that money to pay Charlie Manson or Beausoleil. So they decided, Charlie said, you guys being Beausoleil and two girls, Susan Atkins and Mary Bruner, said, you go over there and I'll tell you what to do to your boy, Gary Hinman. So they directed him, and especially Robbie Beausoleil, he said, cut him. So he took a big sword and cut him, and he chopped part of his ear off. And so then they held him down while he sewed that part of the ear back onto his ear with dental floss. Now, I'm sure that felt terrible. And then they tied him up, and when Charlie Manson got there, they tortured him for 3 days. Then they killed him. And then with the blood, that it was nasty. It was a nasty, nasty mess. And what they did was they put the paws of a dog in his blood and put dog prints all over to make it look like it was a racially charged murder, blacks versus white. Okay? So it was like one of the most horrible scenes in history. And when the cops came in, they did not know what to do. Hinman kept saying, I don't have any money to give you. But it didn't matter. It just didn't matter. So Manson came over there, and the party began with torturing this guy for 3 full days. And that's why, well, we'll get to part 2 next week. That is why the LaBianca Tate murders were so gruesome, because actually they were trying to mimic, they were trying to mimic this murder to try to make it look like Robbie had not murdered his buddy Gary Hinman. They were actually trying to cover for him, but it obviously that didn't work. So actually, I was wrong. It was as soon as Manson got there, he struck Hinman with that sword and, you know, cut his face and chopped his ear off, and they stitched it back up, and that had to be horrible. And Hinman was just dying for medical treatment. But he was captive in his home and was tortured for 3 days, and just they took turns. But I believe actually Robbie Beausoleil and Charles Manson were both convicted of first degree murder for the murder of Gary Hinman. And we don't know if Hinman really had an inheritance, but I do not think that he did. So It was just, that was terrible. And what happened, though, was Beausoleil was so tired after 3 days, he was actually in Gary Hinman's Fiat, and he was just pulled off on the side of the road there on U.S. Route 101 between San Luis Obispo and Atascadero. Devin, do you know where that is? It says it was very steep around there. Do you know?
Yeah, I've been up around there.
And it's just real, and, you know, if you pull off to the side of the road and you're all bloody, like you've just killed somebody, the cops are going to find you, aren't they? If you're just sitting on the side of U.S. 101, and it was just kind of a mess. So anyway, 12 years after that murder, Robbie kept saying that the killing was a result of a drug transaction that went wrong. And, I mean, I guess he was somewhat referring to those drugs that he sold those bikers, and I guess that's true. But they really never talked about that much. And so finally that came out that had happened, and that's where $1,000 went. But it was just, I mean, they kept telling different stories all the way up until they died. And so he was convicted in April 1970. He was found, he was 22 years old. He was guilty of first-degree murder, and he was sentenced to death. His 18-year-old girlfriend, Kitty Lutzinger, had testified against him and then became part of him, part of the witness protection program, even though she was pregnant by him, and she actually had his daughter. The daughter would be cared for by her parents because she apparently vanished. And obviously we think that's witness protection program. And then, of course, in 72, well, between 72 and 74, and finally in 74, his death sentence was commuted to life in prison. He was called as a witness at a sanity hearing for four of the other Manson associates in 73. And he said that they would not conform to society's standards of sane behavior, saying, "I'm at war with everybody in this courtroom. It's nothing personal, but the world has been gaddling at my brothers and sisters, and as long as they're ripping off our world, our friends, and our children, you better pray I never get out." But then again, he got tired of all this, and he became a little less rough and ridiculous. Even though his, he was in prison, and I think he's still in prison right now. So that's pretty much the story of Robbie Beausoleil. He was, whether it ever says so or not, he was Manson's number two guy, and he was a murderer. And so, and he was part of the Tate and LaBianca murders, which we'll talk about next time. We have had a show, and we talked about Sharon Tate, and that was horrible. But we're going to talk about the main banana, Charlie Manson, next time. So, all right, you guys are experienced. Devin, you're in Hollywood. You're out there in the Los Angeles area. You know how that place operates. Papa Stro, yeah. You're in a business that is sometimes a little bit rough there in wrestling, and they don't mean to hurt anybody badly, but they can. And Tony, you're an experienced investigator working for Harlan County and the court office, the office of the court and everything. So what do you guys think about all this mayhem and madness? Who wants to start? Somebody.
I think they were.
All right, was that Devin started first? Hit it, Devin.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was just going to say, I've actually been lucky enough to do this tour called the Manson Helter Skelter Tour. It's done by a company called Dearly Departed Tours, and I mentioned them before on this podcast.
Yes.
And on Scarycast. Yeah, so I've done that a couple of times now. It's a really great tour. You really kind of get a sense of the feeling of that summer 1969, and you kind of retrace a lot of the steps of Manson and his people. So it's definitely worth experiencing. And we've been to the El Coyote, which is where Sharon Tate had her last meal. So we sat at that exact table where they sat. I would definitely recommend, if you're interested, to come out and do the tour. And then there's a documentary that they made called 6 Degrees of Helter Skelter. And that's a really cool documentary. And I helped do the music on it. So there's a little plug.
6 Degrees of what?
Helter Skelter.
If I can find that one on, is that old enough that it might be on YouTube?
It might be, yeah, I'm not sure. I do know that when they were researching for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino and some of the cast watched that movie, the 6 Degrees of Helter Skelter.
All right, after the show, I want to talk with you about your buddy that does those tours and see if we might could engineer getting him on the show next week, because
yeah,
next week is
cool.
It's all about Charles Manson, Charlie Maddox. It's all about Charlie Maddox, and we'll touch on Sharon Tate, I am certain. So, yeah, I'll chat with you after the show, and I hope we can see about getting him there. And if you have any other comments since you've had the tour, please let me know. I mean, that's great. And now,
yeah.
The next person was talking was none other than investigator Tony Filosi. What do you think, Tony, about this whole mess, Robbie Beausoleil?
I think that I've got several theories. I've researched a little bit today on Manson and some of his partners in crime, so to speak. I think they were involved a lot deeper in drugs than the drug dealing, especially, and we'll talk, I guess, more about him next week, Tex Watson.
Yeah.
And Manson also, you know, they made part of their living, or most of their living, from drug dealing. Manson, Tex Watson, the fellow's name was Crow. He ripped him off, and then Crow called the family compound. This is, alleged, and was looking for Tex Watson. He says, "Let me talk to Charlie." Well, you got Charles Tex Watson and then Charlie Manson. So Watson's not there. Manson picks up the phone, and this drug dealer says, "Hey, man," he says, give me my money. I'm going to come up there, and I'm going to burn the ranch and rape your women." And so Manson says, "Hey, just let's talk about this." So he meets up with Crow. There's an altercation. Crow says, Manson pulls a gun, and Crow says, "Shoot me here, shoot me right here." Didn't think Manson would do it, so Manson pops him, and Crow, as we know, survived the gunshot. So I think. And I'm going to look a lot more into this before next week, but I think the drugs and drug dealing played a lot larger part in a lot of this than what some of the folks think. And I've got some ideas on Tex Watson. And one name that we need to look at, can I jump just a little bit ahead,
yes,
Sean?
Yes, you can. That's why we're here.
Terry Melcher. Has anyone heard of Terry Melcher?
Yeah.
Terry Melcher is a record
yeah.
producer that knew Dennis Wilson from the Beach Boys.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they got hooked up. I think maybe he picked up one of the family members. The term the Manson family was coined during the trial. They were basically known just as a family or the family. At the Spahn Ranch. It wasn't the Manson family lived at the Spahn Ranch. Manson got introduced to Dennis Wilson, and they recorded one or two songs that he had written. And Terry Melcher, guess where Terry Melcher lived at?
Well, where?
He lived where Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate lived. They did. Ah.
Right now.
Now, Melcher was supposed to also help with a documentary about the family, Manson and family and his musical pursuits and things like that. So Manson was supposed to be compensated $3,000 or $5,000 for the contribution to the Beach Boys album. And this Melcher was doing the brokering on this. So I think, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, 10,050 CeeLo Drive. Is that correct address,
yes.
Devin?
10050,
yeah. Yes, 10050 CeeLo Drive is in Beverly Hills, California. Here's another interesting factoid. Harry Melcher's girlfriend was none other than Candace Bergen. So she was, Candace Bergen lived there also.
Excuse me?
If I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
Candace Bergen. Yeah.
Yeah, Candace Bergen.
Terry Melcher's girlfriend. But they were out at the Spawn Ranch, and Manson tripped out, and they saw some side of him they didn't. I think the Wilson guy was with him, too. Vince Wilson may have been with him. But anyway, there was a couple of fellas at the Spawn Ranch, but Terry Melcher for sure was there. They saw some sort of behavior out of Manson that they just backed off from, you know. And so all the deals fell through. Now, Manson, in my opinion, this is where you start getting into the twists and turns. You know, a lot of people will say the Helter Skelter thing and covering up for like we're reading here, for what was the fellow's name? Robbie Bousselet. But I think that Tex Watson was sent, and the other family members were sent to that address, thinking that Melcher was there, because that he had screwed him on a couple of deals. And I think Manson that there were some inner workings inside the group where Tex Watson was wanting to be the man. And I don't know that Manson directly ordered them to kill the folks. I think he thought Melcher was there. That's where he still lives. And he was sending them to scare Melcher up to come through with his part of the deal. And they got there. No Melcher, but there's people to kill. And they done killed somewhat. The night before was that, no. They killed the Biancas after. But that's kind of what I think is they were sent to this residence thinking Melcher was there. Instead, they found Sharon Tate and her guest. So that's, you know, my thoughts on some of it.
Yeah, we'll be exploring this. I'm going to see this week since I have so much to do in my time. I'm going to see if I can find a copy of which of the Helter Skelter books are available and try to do that. And I will talk to Devin and see if we can arrange for his buddy to come on the show, or if we can at least Devin if he can't maybe we can do a short interview and just play that, you know, before the show or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that'd
Devin,
be...
excuse me, John. Had you heard the Terry Melcher angle to the murders?
I had, yes, and I believe that's all correct what you said.
But anyway, like John was saying, we'll get more into it. Actually, I found that really interesting, and I'll give you all a heads up if you like Rob Zombie. Flicks. Rob Zombie did an excellent, excellent documentary on Charles Manson the last day. That's where a lot of this came from. So check out Rob. Did any of y'all know that Rob Zombie did a flick on or a documentary on Manson?
I didn't, but I liked it. I've seen some of his movies and I really like them, so I would definitely check
that
out.
I love Zombie. I love Rob Zombie, but check that out. Gives you a lot of different.
Yeah.
He's very matter of fact. Zombie's very, very matter of fact in this, and he draws a lot of conclusions that I think are very logical.
He's a smart guy. Best performance Rob Zombie ever did was on the Grammy Awards back when he first became quite well known, and his sampler went out on him. It blew, which had all of his music. It turned out it was an almost a cappella performance, and it was great. Just everybody kept saying how good this is, and they didn't realize he'd had all these technical problems in the middle of it. So, I mean, he's a heck of a smart guy, and he's a heck of a good performer. And I saw it. I mean, it was live. That was another 7-second delay, and they couldn't stop it. He was up there. It was amazing. All right, Papa Stro, what do you make about all this? You've been in and around the good, the bad, and the ugly. What do you think?
Well, it sounds like to me Charles Manson was, I mean, a master of many things. Manipulation, delegating authority, and
yeah.
street smart, and I mean, very, very intelligent man. I mean, it was just, and the fact that he would get other people to do his work for him, and to the point where he would have someone slap themselves in the face and like it, more or less. It's truly astounding. It's just as psychotic and crazy as he was. I mean, it's amazing how intelligent he was and what he could get people to do.
It's so funny
yeah.
you mentioned that, Papa Stro. I started working on a book called Manson Family Management Strategies, and I stopped.
I mean, you know, don't do what we want. We're going to send our friends to see you.
yeah.
I'm telling you, you know, he makes the mob look happy. I mean, yeah, I was trying to put. I think I even owned that domain name at one time. I kind of let it go, but it might be time to haul that thing back out. I mean, he was quite the man. So it looks like we've gotten a good start. We've also gotten some really good ideas of what we're going to look at for next week. Maybe a guest to be with us. I'm going to talk to Robin, see what kind of psychic vibes she can get on this group of people. And again, we hope she and her family and her neighbors are going to be okay after all that hurricane, all that tornado that descended upon them. And one other thing that did they talk about the connection with Devin, did they ever talk about the connection with Jane Mansfield and Greg Tyler?
I don't know about that, no.
Okay, I'm going to hunt that up. I've got Greg Tyler's book, The Joy of Hustling, and it was about the quite loose morals out there in the Hollywood era in the 60s. And they mention a connection with Jane Mansfield and Charlie Manson and the Manson family. I'm going to find that if I can find the book. And yeah, yeah. It was always amazing to me. I mean, you know, Manson got around, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
That boy
sure.
got around more than you'd ever know, and so did Robbie Bosola. I mean, Robbie, just you got to give the guy credit. So he's in prison, and he's in his mid-20s. So he starts doing the pen pal thing with some gal, and he has her visit him. He marries her, and then they have 4 kids together while he's incarcerated. She comes for for visits. I mean, this guy Robbie, he's the man. I mean, he knew how to work the system. He really did. And I'm going to see if there are any of his recordings or whatever that are available. I think it'd be great to get some of this. I think, you know, people can say what they want, but memorabilia, whether it's from a murderer or from a saint, it's something that people need to hold on to because they're not making any more of it. So I'm going to try to do a little bit of research onto what he's got, because Manson passed away, what, in 2017, I believe. He had heart problems,
that's right.
and he died, and there went a true part of Americana. It wasn't a good part. That was a part of Americana. So that's part one of Helter Skelter, Charles Manson, by the hosts of Murder 123. And I think we've uncovered
Ashland, Kentucky, brings back a lot of memories, man. Asheville, Kentucky.
I'm sure you've. how many times do you think you have wrestled in Ashland, Kentucky, Papa Stroke?
Oh, man, quite a bit over the years. Very, very unique town.
Do you mind sharing why it's unique?
Oh, gosh. Some of the people I've met there through the years. One time, I was stuck with his manager named Classy Roy Bass, and he would go to the races, right? They're like in Huntington, outside of Ashland. And he looked like a human version of Toucan Sam with the, like, multicolored mohawk and everything. And, he was a character. Oh, my gosh. One time we were in a restaurant, and he was, like, faking, you know, gagging on some food just so he'd get a free meal, right? And he'd do some most outlandish things. One time he was staying with another wrestler and me at the hotel. And this wrestler was like giving him a hard time. And I kept telling him, I said, man, this Toucan Sam, well, his name Roy Bass, right? I was like, please don't leave Roy alone. He's not right. He's crazy. Don't mess with him, right? But he wouldn't listen. He kept antagonizing him, right? So I go to sleep and I'm waking up with some ruckus. You know, startled me. I woke up and I looked across the room, see what was going on. And there's Roy Bass beating the crap out of this wrestler. He's on top of it, and he's got this funny voice. You know, Roy Bass says, "So you think you're tough, huh? You think you're a fighter? You think you're a wrestler? You think you're tough?" He's smacking him in the head, and oh my God, I'm losing my composure, just laughing. Right. The next morning, okay, I get up. And I look across, and the wrestler had left, right? And there's Roy Bass, the Toucan Sam guy, looking out the window, giggling, laughing. And he's like, "Butter, give me a butter. You got to see this butter, right?" So I go where he's at to look through the window, right? And there's this wrestler walking around in circles, smoking cigarettes, stressing out and everything. And I looked at Roy. I said, "Roy, what happened?" And said, "I don't think he's going to wrestle tonight." And like, "Why not? What'd you do?" He said, "Because I told him I put hair removal in his boots." So he was walking around the rest of day and night just barefooted because he was afraid to put his boots and shoes on because he's afraid Roy Bass put some hair removal in his crazy cat, man. I'll never forget him. Look, just Toucan Sam from the Fruit Loops boxes, mm-hmm. cereal boxes. It's like a human yep. version of Toucan Sam. I kid you not. Quite yep. a character.
And I have to, since you're talking about Kentucky, one of my favorite stories is a comment. It all hinges around a comment that was made about the people of Hazard, Kentucky. I've been to Hazard. I helped together the Food City development up on top of this hill. I mean, I got there. Mr. Smith said, "I got a piece of land. We're going to put a Food City there." And I get there and I look at it, and it's straight up a mountain. I said, "Mr. Smith, who owns Food City?" I said, "I don't know about that." He said, "Well, if you don't want to do it, I'll do it myself." And he got mad at me. He went up there and he, damn if he didn't put a Food City on top of a mountain. Unbelievable. He didn't care. He said they got to buy groceries. I don't care what they say. They got to buy groceries. And so, you know, had my deal taken away from me. But yeah, tell us about Hazard, Kentucky. Tony, now you've been to Hazard, right?
Oh yeah.
How can you not go to Hazard, Kentucky? I know. All right, Papa Stro. You know the comment I'm talking about. Proceed.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, so many memories. Hazard, Kentucky. Oh my goodness! All those winding roads. Oh gosh, I'd get seasick driving this run. I would feel for the ring crew bringing the ring truck to the shows because I mean all the winding turns you have to take to go to Hazard.
Been there, done that.
Jim Cornette even mentioned in his podcast not too long ago. I was talking about the time where after the show he was asking me for a ride. Back, you know, out of town, right? And Cornette never asked me has never asked me that point before. I had to tell him, and I was like, "What's wrong, Jimmy? Everything okay?" He said, "Someone, some crazy lady slashed all four of my tires in my car." Like, how did she know it was your car? And he pointed over to the license plate. It said Louisville Slugger, right? So that, you know. So he as soon as he says that, this lady pulls up behind my car, right? And she looked like the Undertaker's sister. Evidently, she's from Hazard.
Good Lord.
And I mean, her face literally looked glue in the dark like Casper, right? And I looked at Jimmy and said, "Hey, don't worry, Jimmy. I got you. Let's go. Let's get here." He took off. Oh, man.
I know. Crazy. I was talking about the great comment you made about how many people there seemed to be at wrestling matches in Hazard. Remember that one?
Oh, God. That was crazy because we get there, there's all trees. All you see is trees, right? In the building.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how in the heck are we going to get a house tonight, an audience to watch the show? And I swear, people were coming out of the woodwork. It was a packed house. And you would think they were coming from the tree houses on top of the trees in the mountain or something. I mean, it was just crazy where they were coming out of the woodwork in all different directions. Like, where these people live? My God.
I've asked some people, you know, since crazy. You told that story. Yes, there are some people that have tree houses and live in Hazard. Be careful about walking around.
Yeah, I believe it.
Oh, my God. That's right.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. Well, that's great. Well, guys, it has been a lot of fun. We miss Robin. Robin, we miss you. Well, you'll be back with us next week.
Robin.
We'll have,
hey,
we'll
Robin.
Have more stuff. Robin, you're the best.
Get well soon, Robin. Miss you.
Yeah, and I'm gonna put up a GoFundMe or something to raise some money for them, $200 because they've got some damage there, and, you know, we got to help our friends. Because if friends don't help friends, nobody will help anybody. So she's truly a great friend, and she's been a wonderful friend to me and introduced me to the whole Bigfoot world and all that stuff. So we'll get that done. I'll put some of this Charles Manson media. I will give Devin a call right after this and talk to him about a potential guest next week. We'll see what we can do. And so on behalf of the revitalized Dr. John, and Murder 123 with Papa Stroh, with Tony Filosi, and with Devin Tate, and in our hearts and thoughts, Robin McCray. I hope everybody has a great week. We're going to do some work, and we'll just have another great show next time. And everybody, Thursday night, 9 o'clock. What is it, Papa Stroh? What's Thursday night at 9?
Oh, WCW Retro.
That's exactly right. That's right, and then we'll go flying into Scary Cast at 11. But anyway, yeah, please be
literally we will be flying.
we will. It's great. I don't know what it is, but I think in the 4 years that I've known you, your show went from okay to unbelievable. It is the most. I believe it's the most entertaining podcast on the internet now. I mean, it is just clockwork awesome.
Clockwork. Yeah, we try to have some fun.
We do. That's right. And then I met Granny last week. Is Granny coming on?
Yeah, I'm sure she said she'd be back. So looking forward to having
her good.
On. Well, good.
Granny's awesome. Then we had you and her on Scary Cast. So love you guys to death. So thanks everybody for being here. I'll be talking to all of you. I'll put some Manson media up tonight. And it's been a lot of fun. It's just good to get with my bros, and we've got Robin in our thoughts and prayers. And so we'll see you next time, everybody. The crew will be back next week for Charlie Manson, Charlie Maddox, Part 2. Have a good one. You guys be.
Good night, everyone.
Good night,
everybody. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Bye, y'all.